That sounds kind of confidential. Yes, go ahead, go ahead.
He made me store some things, some stuff in my home when I was an informant. I seen him do a lot of dirty things. He's a partner. At one time, I found out after I had separated from my spouse, I had remarried. I know Bill Hastings very well. I've been at his home for dinner. He was going to stand up as best man at my wedding, but some things went bad because I was a freelance informant.
Okay.
I made a lot of money doing what I did, but he was very dirty.
I mean,
and he made an attempt on my life.
What?
And the reason I'm telling you this is, this happened a long time ago, but I'm sick and I'm dying now, and I don't have long to live, but I don't have nothing to fear, but I had to leave the state of Texas.
Okay.
Because I actually caught one of his police officers on wires threatening to murder me if I didn't leave the state.
Wow.
That worked with him. Yeah. That was back in the 90s. And he actually had me store drugs in my apartment. They planted me in an apartment complex undercover to gather information on drug dealers that lived in off Interstate 6 up in Bear Creek.
Yes.
Texas, yeah. And at one time they came to me and asked me to hide 50 pounds of marijuana under my waterbed for them.
And what?
They said they needed it. And they said they needed it for a further case that they were going to use it on a reversal narcotics deal.
Wow. And then what happened?
Well, I took it and I threw it out in the parking lot because I just started questioning what was going on. He was shooting out my windows with BB guns, and they were turning off my little breaker switches outside, and I caught him doing it. One night, I left the house with a friend. They had a Harris County Sheriff's deputy pull us over. They told me to get out of the van and start walking, that the person driving had a warrant for not walking his dog on a leash. And I was out in the middle of nowhere. So I started walking through a field down a path. And this was after my life. I had already made a threat on my life. You know, they were sitting outside my the apartment where they had me, planted me. And I went to Radio Shack and bought a mini recorder with a wire, and I put it on, and I walked up to the narcotics officer that was in the vehicle. I never saw him before from the Syntac division, and then I knew everybody down there. My reputation was phenomenal, and I mean, I infiltrated Colombian drug lords, literally, in Houston. I took down big players. And, this gentleman, I got him on recorder, threatening that they were going to murder me and throw me in the river, the bayou.
Yes.
And I didn't leave right away. And, I showed him I had the wire rod. And, they all pulled away. There were three undercover units parked outside in various locations. He was dirty, really dirty.
Wow.
And I just saw him do a lot of corrupt things.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you a question. Do you have that tape recorder?
walked out of that place with the clothes on my back and left everything because I was so scared that I had to go and hide. I literally had to walk on foot in the dark. This is what he did to me the night that they planned. They tried to literally kill me. They pulled me over, my friend over, I told you. They told me to, the deputy told me to start walking, so I'm walking through a field. And okay. It had high grass, and I heard a noise, so I got down on my hands and knees. When we got pulled over, it didn't seem right. I knew something was wrong. And I heard something in the weeds, and I got on my knees. I heard one man's voice that I recognized say, "Is he close enough?" And then I heard William Hastings' voice. He said, "He's close enough. With the scope on this rifle, I can hit a dime at a mile."
Wow.
So I laid in the weeds till almost the sun came up. They got up and were looking for me. They thought I was walking. They didn't know I was laying on the ground, literally 25 feet away from them.
Wow. Wow. That's...
And this is real. I'd be willing to take a lie detector test.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you one thing, okay?
Yeah.
Do you have any recordings or any paper?
A lot of things changed in my life, and things went in storage. I actually remarried. He was going to be the best man in my wedding. He hung around with, I'm not saying criminals, but he didn't care who his friends were, whether he was a police officer or not.
But let me ask you another question. Why did you have this super fight to the point that he wanted to kill you? And why was he storing drugs in your house?
I don't know where they got it from or why he asked me to store it there. But I actually believe it was something for personal gain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But why did you...
I was afraid. I even thought maybe they were going to try to set me up for no reason. I had no reason why he turned on me like that, because I started avoiding him and I started working with other police officers, the state police and other people out of other counties and other SYNTAC divisions, and I was working with the state police at the time because we stepped up and I was going after larger criminals, you know, with larger quantities of narcotics. I did undercover deals. I had more felonies for them people than a lot of their police officers themselves had.
Yes. But why did he...
responsible for hundreds of felony convictions.
Why did he get so angry to the point that he wanted to kill you?
Because he felt betrayed that I went someplace else. And the day I went out there, I threw the stuff out in the parking lot. And they came and pulled up and picked it up and put it in the car and left.
You mean the drugs? The
50 pounds of marijuana, yeah.
Oh, you told them you didn't want it. You threw it in the parking lot. They were so pissed they came to pick it up. They threatened to kill you?
Well, yeah, because I didn't want nothing to do with them no more after that, because I knew they were up to... They were being corrupt.
They were
so
up to...
I wouldn't work with them no more.
Yeah. I wouldn't blame you. But now I understand why they were so pissed off. I mean, if you kind of...
And I think they were afraid that I was going to talk to other people about it.
Yes.
But I never spoke about it because I was in fear of my life because there were things going on at that apartment after that, before I left. The final day I left is when that police officer came there and was sent there to tell me. And they had already made an attempt that night to get me out in the middle of nowhere. And I was literally 25 feet away from them in grass weeds that were about 4 feet high, laying on my stomach, and listened to Bill Hastings say, with the scope on his rifle, I could hit a dime a mile away.
Yeah, that would...
He was with another guy named Mike Kelly. Now, Mike Kelly, I knew years before, working with a little department called Jersey Village. And there was a lot of things that went on in that police department, too, when Mike Kelly was there before he hooked up with Bill Hastings, before he was assigned to the FinTech division. Mike Kelly, he worked for Jersey Village, and then he was just a regular detective. Somebody sent me over there to talk to him because it's, you know where Jersey Village is, I'm sure.
I've heard, yes. It's around...
Jersey Village Police Department. It's a small little area. You know, it's like 5 square miles of the neighborhoods. And then they had a little shopping strip with a game room in it. Well, there were some chill kids in there that were doing acid and ecstasy and asked me to go in there to see if I could make some buys. That's how I met Mike Kelly.
Wow.
So Jersey Village actually had me going out with them, and they had me luring people into their little township to do the deals so they can do all the seizures on the monies and the vehicles and stuff.
Yes.
Instead of going to where the drugs actually were, so they could, you know, make the seizures on it instead of letting the county and them have it. I mean, it was worth a lot of corruption stuff. They literally left me at one time arrest somebody because I don't know what happened. They all left, and I had the criminal in my car, and I was supposed to pull over and act like I had a flat tire. Well, I get out, pretend I have a flat, nobody shows up.
Oh.
And I had to literally bring the guy to the police station.
That's...
And it was just, I mean, and it was an illegal, it wasn't a good arrest.
Yeah.
And that was Mike Kelly. And I got something really, real bad to tell you about Mike Kelly. The reason I was married to another lady at a time. She had called him and said, I need you to give me a ride. I was at work. She asked Mike Kelly to come get her. She worked in a nightclub. She said, I don't feel good. I think somebody put something in my drink.
Yeah.
Okay. So she comes home, and I helped her out of the car upstairs. She woke up the next morning. She told me, I don't know what happened. I woke up in the back seat of the police car.
Oh.
And she said that Mike Kelly, this police officer, had raped her.
Yikes. Wow. Do you know her name? What's her name?
My wife passed away. My ex, she passed away in 2009. I don't know what from. But I looked on the internet. And she died in 2009. I'm not sure of what causes or whatever. She still lived in Texas.
Yes, well, let me ask
you
this.
Her name was Frances Ritchie.
Frances Ritchie. They raped your ex-wife? That's what you're telling me?
He did. Mike Kelly did. That's before he went to the FinTech division.
Whoa.
He worked for solely by Jersey Village at the time.
Yes. Let me ask you this. Is there any...
They were doing seizures on automobiles and money, and they were keeping the cars. The chief of police for Jersey Village, one of the automobile seizures, he gave his son as a graduation present.
Wow.
So that's what they were doing with the seizures, with the money and any, you know, items, jewelry, watches, automobiles, anything like that.
They were just keeping them.
You know. Well, they gave me the walk of the town. I mean, they gave me the keys to the city there. I was allowed to come and do anything I wanted there.
Yeah.
I had full access to the whole police department.
I bet.
Evidence rooms, offices, anything I wanted. And I'm not going to lie, I was a convicted criminal.
Yes. Was that for drugs, yeah, too, or you were a drug dealer one time?
It was a theft case, and it was when I was younger.
Oh, okay. So that was before, and they basically have you use you like luring these people so that they can...
Since I moved to Ohio, I used to work for a gentleman by the name of Larry Feinstein. He worked for, he was a constable, worked for Constable's Department at one time, and then he worked for the Rosenberg up there, police department. A real good, honest police officer. I confided in him a lot.
Yes.
And I never actually told him what happened because I lost contact with him for a couple of years there before all this happened. And I just recently, over the last year, had gotten in touch with them over the internet. I found them.
Okay.
And he's in Wimberley, Texas, works Blanco County. He's an interim chief of police for Blanco County. You can contact this guy, and he can tell you, if I tell you something, I'm honest, because Tim's a good guy, and I'm credible.
Yes, what?
What I tell you.
Let me write his name. Hold on.
And this is something I came forward for, not out of hate and despite. But the worst kind of criminal in the world is a corrupt officer, because they have the opportunity to hide and cover up. And, I mean, they can get away with some terrible crimes if they want.
Yes, I believe so, because people believe them, and then they betray the trust and do things behind the people's back that people don't, are not willing to even believe it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they actually put informants to me and told me they were police officers, and they wanted me to meet these other informants. I'm telling them I don't want to meet nobody and let them know that I work
for you.
Back in the day, the way it used to work, if I did what they call the reversal narcotics deal, let's say that I found a crook that was willing to buy 25 keys of cocaine. Well, on the seizure money, I got 20% of that through the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency.
Yes.
So it was a very lucrative business for somebody like me. And I worked as a private investigator for American Investigations, and I had a 100% success rate.
Wow.
On every case I ever did for them. And because I was a natural at it, I had family members that weren't law enforcement. But I want to You not only work in the state of Texas, you represent corruption.
Well,
what, the United States.
What we want to do is to basically gather information on corrupt public officials, whether as they might be the mayor of the city, the police chief, the fire department head. You know that in Katy they got the fire department head on narcotics. Yeah. He was stealing drugs from the ambulances that he had. So, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, you know, it goes real deep. I know that. I read on there too, and I had been told this back in the early '90s that my record could be covered up and I could go to the academy and they would be willing to hire me as a police officer. And I wasn't really believing what I was hearing at that time, but they meant it.
Yes.
Because after what I read on the internet, what they said is was true, you know. But I'm the type of guy, you know, you don't stand on both sides of the railroad tracks at the same time. You stay on one side. You're either good or you're bad. There's no in between.
Yes.
When it comes to the trust of the public, you know, the taxpayers put their money and their trust in the elected officials, and when they're the ones committing the crimes, there's nobody left to turn to.
Yes.
Because they can do and say what they want about you, and it's going to be believed. The reason I asked you about outside of your area in the state of Texas was that I was involved in an investigation here in the state of Ohio in a small independent police department, and I was involved with corrupt police, and I was actually sent to them to act as an informant to gather information about their corruption. They were doing their own drug investigations, and they were keeping all the seizure money and property and cars, anything they got, and they weren't turning it over to the county. They were lying about what they seized and had. I saw it firsthand. They also had their police officers that were on duty doing second jobs while they were on duty and getting paid from them jobs while they were supposed to be on duty, getting paid through the city of Twinsburg, Ohio.
Yeah. That's in Ohio. So, that's in Ohio.
Yeah, so the chief of police, you know, I gathered all the information, found out at nighttime they had a hidden command center they were working out of, which was a gravel yard. They weren't working out of a police station because the fire department was attached to it at the time. Well, I was picked up and arrested and charged with a crime and went to trial. During my incarceration, we found out that the affidavits that were written against me, the people didn't even exist.
Uh-huh.
Because we looked at them and all the affidavits had all the same handwriting.
Somebody planned it.
The police officer. Well, I found out who the police officer, that the police officer that arrested me that did this, we couldn't figure out my attorneys why, you know, $50 million question is why are they doing this? Well, they found out actually who committed the crime.
Okay.
That I got locked up for. But later on why she did this. It was her father that was the chief of police that I got, did the investigation on.
Oh, yeah, you were.
And she went under her maiden name. And I actually went to the penitentiary for it. When I got out, I hired attorneys. They said the statute of limitations ran out. So I wanted to go after her for criminal. She lied under oath. She forged affidavits. She destroyed evidence. They even after we found out who the person was that committed the crime, I even have officers to back up that she knew after she was confronted that they had already had the suspect that committed the crime.
Okay.
The prosecutor and them buried it. And I'm not afraid to say nothing. But the attorneys told me, listen, Tim, they said, leave it alone. Go on with your life. Because something bad might happen to you, or someday you'll be driving your car and you'll get pulled over, and the patrolman will find something in there, whether it was there before they pulled you over or not.
Damn.
So,
yeah, they're threatening you to plant something. Let me ask you this: who's your friend here in Texas that we can talk to?
He knew Bill Hastings. I worked with a lot of guys there that would tell you that I was a stand-up guy. And when I did something, when I went after something for him, I did the job.
How do you,
I was very good at what I did.
How do you spell the last name, Feinstein's?
F-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N.
Hold on, F? F what?
F-I-E-N-S-T-E-I-N.
And Feinstein.
First name, Larry.
Larry. Larry Feinstein.
Now, I never openly told Larry about what happened. But if you want to ask about my credibility,
yes,
go ahead.
The problem is this: your name is Timothy. How do you pronounce your last name, Timothy? Preeb. Timothy Preeb.
P-R-E-I-B.
Yes.
And I'm very ill now. I'm waiting on a double lung transplant. I don't have long to live.
Yes, you sound pretty bad, by the way. God bless you, okay? I wish you the best on that. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's a real trouble.
Yeah, it is.
That's a real problem right there. Let me just say this, okay? I really praise you for coming forth on this because, you know, it is good to lay out the bad people. I love good cops, but some of the corrupt ones really take over and oppress the bad one, the good ones, into doing bad things, or into hiding what they're doing.
The Hastings and Mike Kelly and they. While I sat in my living room, they sat across the field and shot my windows out with pellets and turned my lights off to try to get me to come outside to the breaker box in the dark.
Probably.
They did a lot of things, yeah.
Probably and, to shoot you.
And then the last attempt was, first was the threat that I had. I wish I had that video cassette with that man, with the narcotics officers from the Syntec Division that came to me. They weren't from the Harris County Syntec Division where Bill was assigned. They were narcotics officers sent them from Katy, Texas, Harris County, to where they had me planted in an apartment complex out in Bear Creek Park.
Okay.
And that's where that was the apartment where they had me stash 50 pounds of marijuana.
So then you got really scared because you knew that they were going to do something wrong, or that was the wrong deal with it?
Well, no, I think they believed I was getting ready to blow the whistle on them because I questioned them about it, and they couldn't answer. I said, it don't sound right. I said, Bill, you have evidence rooms. This shouldn't be in my apartment. I told them this. I said to them, well, if it's right, then please, I need to talk to somebody else why this has to be kept in this apartment instead of in an evidence room in a police department someplace like it should be.
Yes. So
when he couldn't answer me, he started getting a real bad attitude with me. And I told him one day, listen, you need to come get this out of my apartment or I'm going to call somebody.
Oh, shit. You said that? You actually told him that?
Yeah, he did it. And he didn't come get it, so I took it. A day, like 2 days later, I took it and I threw it out in the parking lot right out the front door. Oh. And he was sitting around there watching me to see probably if I was going to take it and dump it somewhere. Because I had thought maybe they were trying to set me up for no reason, but he wasn't. That was something they got a hold of somewhere, and that was for personal gain.
Yes. So, oh my God.
Doubt in my mind.
Do you know whatever happened to those 50 pounds?
Well, they got it. They pulled up and had it put it in a vehicle. And one of the gentlemen that had loaded it in the vehicle was one of the same officer that pulled up. He pulled up in front of them. They were like doing surveillance on me after that. I threw it out, told him I didn't want it. You know, and I need to talk to somebody to make sure this is right. I knew it wasn't.
They were up to something. They may have been trying to use you for something.
Well, I don't know. But anyways, one of the gentlemen came and got it, that was there, that put it in the vehicle, was the same officer that came. They were sitting outside my apartment, outside of that apartment they had me in. So I walked out there. I went to Radio Shack, and I said to him, I said, why are you watching me? I said, what's going on with you? I said, who sent you here? What do you want? He said, you got about 24 hours to leave this state. If I was you, I would leave this state because your family is going to find you floating in the bayou, and your wife too.
When was this? Was that in the...
This was in 1992.
Oh, that was about the time... Was that about the time when they killed Joe Campos, the Army Mexican officer, Mexican-American, that the HPD threw in the bayou?
No, that was after that.
Your deal was after that.
They did that. The gentleman they threw in the bayou, I believe, was before 92.
Yeah, so they
That was Houston Police Department that did that.
Yes, that's the Houston HPD.
Yeah.
So I believe that they already knew how to get rid of people by throwing them in the bayou, and that's why they scare you like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because the Jose Campos was before.
I wasn't afraid of them, because even as a convicted criminal, they allowed me to carry firearms and everything.
So they can't, if you turn on them and you're questioning them, yeah, they're going to turn on you. And if you have the drugs in your apartment, they're going to turn on you and say that you just got them. And then they can take you in, and then you can say whatever the hell you want, and you're gone.
Yeah, but
you're
gone. They wanted to do that. They needed a place to hide them. And
now,
when they planted me in there, they thought, you know, I would believe them. And I knew better because I was around law enforcement, and I was doing what they were doing way longer before they were.
Gotcha. Now, let me ask you this. There's some...
Understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I was involved in narcotics investigations probably for 10, 11, 12 years on a daily basis almost.
So you knew everybody.
I was doing it for a living.
You knew everybody.
I worked with the feds, the DEA, I worked with the state police, I worked with some numerous separate counties.
Yikes.
You know.
Now, let me ask you this. There was a cop, there's a cop that lied on some things, and they lied on some affidavits, you know, the KDPD, and Hastings was supervising that and all that. And I discovered that this corrupt cop, who was also ex-convicted criminal, had an address in some of those trailer parks that they have by, what is it, the Hickle something street in Katy. They have some...
You mean where the trailer park areas were?
Yes. Were they hiding shit in there also?
I don't know, because I never went up in the Katy itself with the Katy Police Department. I was working with Bill Hastings at the time when he was assigned to the Syntac Division. He was only a detective, a narcotics detective then. He wasn't, you know, he was just climbing the ladder.
Oh, I see.
I mean, I ate dinner in his home. I've been to his house in Katy, Texas, and ate dinner there, me and my wife, with his family.
So you...
He was supposed to stand up and be best man at my wedding.
And then they did that to you.
Well, because I started questioning, and I didn't want to be involved in anything illegal. Because I was doing something I enjoyed, and it gave me something to hold my head up about.
Yes.
Something I believed in.
But let me ask you this.
Something I was very good at.
There's a bunch of trailers by Katie Huckley Cutoff Road, and... These corrupt cops.
Katy and Huckley Road?
Yeah, Katy, Huckley Road. There's a lot of trailers in there, and this cop had an old trailer there, but he was living somewhere else. He was not in the trailer. He was living in a house, but he had an address like he was living in a trailer. And that's what triggered me when you mentioned that they were hiding drugs in different apartments. You know, why?
Well, that's probably what it was.
Did you hear anything?
Let me tell you something. They were extremely corrupt. Even when we were doing drug deals undercover, they would do things they shouldn't have been doing to get an arrest and a conviction.
Were they doing false affidavits also and crap like that?
When a drug deal went down, they didn't exactly always say it went down the way it actually did. Because they got rules they got to follow, you know.
I see.
Put it this way. If we call the crook, and they were going to make a delivery. They would deliberately spooked and drove by and didn't stop when they were supposed to meet somewhere, they would pull them down, pull them over, maybe down the road, and say that they actually delivered them when they didn't. And it should have been only a possession instead of a delivery.
Gotcha. So they were inflating, they were inflating the charges to delivery instead of just possession, because they didn't actually deliver the goods, you know, or the bags, should I say, the bags. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Now, I really would like to see.
I went real deep for them people, and I took down part of the M-13, which is the Mexican Mafia, I don't know what, delivery case where it was on the news live where there was a high-speed chase and a shootout with the police. These people had fully automatic weapons, and they delivered to us in Bennigan. I refused to work. They were supposed to show up that day to be involved in the case, and I refused to work with them. So I said, I'll only do this one with the state police. That made him very mad. And that was during the time that I had that stuff stashed in my apartment. I think he started to get worried that I had either already told somebody or I was gonna.
Yes. If you question them, you don't question them, okay? If you do, then he's going to be downhill from then on.
But I'm being honest with you. And by the hand of God, he attempted to kill me.
I do believe that.
I laid in the grass 25 feet from him and listened to him.
Yes.
From Mike Kelly. Why would they pull my friend over and tell him he's got a warrant for walking his dog without a leash?
Come on, yeah.
The deputy says to me, "You get out and start walking before I take you to jail," he says to me. Well, I'm thinking this guy don't know who I am, and he can't talk to me that way, I'm thinking to myself, because I'm not just a punk on the street. I know a lot of people. That ain't going to fly, taking me to jail for nothing. And they did arrest my friend, said he had an outstanding warrant for walking his dog without a leash, which came to be not true. They released them the next morning saying it was a mistake. And they told me to start walking, and it was nothing but fields around there with high grass. I started walking on a path through this grass to cut across these fields to make it to the highway that was right there. When I waited till almost the sun came up, and I got over to a car wash where there was a payphone, and I called somebody. I said, "Please come get me. Make sure your headlights are off when you pull up at this road, because if they were still out there, I didn't want them to see this vehicle out there."
Yeah, that would be.
They were in the grass, and then when they were leaving, I heard them actually get on his radio. Well, I heard him on his radio when I was laying there asking the deputy if he sees me or spots me anywhere, because they were looking for me, because they knew I should have walked past.
Yeah. What was the location? What was that location where they actually...
It was on Clay Road and Highway 6.
Yeah. Back in 1992, there was nothing there, you know?
No, nothing. It was all fields. I think there was an old house. There was a pond and an old house up on the corner way back in there you couldn't see. But
yeah.
On the other side of Highway 6, there were stores. But if you go further down Clay Road, there's nothing there.
No. They shoot you there. They bury you. You're gone. They will never find me.
They shot me and left me there and said that, hey, he was killed by somebody told on, or a drug dealer. Somebody got revenge on him, or so, you know.
It could be anybody.
fentanyl crooks that were carrying fully automatic weapons and dealing in large quantities of drugs. If you remember the two police officers that were involved in the drug deal that stole the plane load of narcotics, one was a DEA agent, the other one was a Houston police officer, and they caught him up in Quebec, Canada, back in the 90s.
I met
them two guys in a nightclub and was getting ready to do a drug deal on them before they disappeared. And then one night I was watching America's Most Wanted and they were on there. I never had no clue they were police officers.
Oh, so they were going to do the same thing to you, probably.
Yeah, well, I watched them in the nightclub selling ecstasy and other drugs. The guy that worked for the Houston Police Department, I remember his first name was Pat, and the guy that worked as a DEA agent, his name was Ray. What they did is they were doing an investigation together in a FinTech division. I don't know which one, Harris County or one of them, and they decided to steal all the drugs and the cash right from under the nose of other police officers, and they went on the run. And they, you know, grew a facial hair and their hair long and stuff like that and tried to hide in the mainstream of nightclubs and stuff like that.
Just to disguise.
And they were moving large quantities of drugs, these guys. So whatever they stole that was supposed to be seized or that was taken in the middle of a drug deal was an extreme large amount of narcotics. It involved cocaine and marijuana and cash that was supposed to be laundered. I know this gentleman, Ray, was posing as an air pilot, airplane pilot. He met up and he was supposed to be, he was going to be flying narcotics from South America and the United States for these people, which were a cartel down in South America. Once they loaded the plane with the stuff, these two gentlemen flew off and just took off with the stuff.
Wow.
With the crooks and the police both there watching. And they portrayed that story on America's Most Wanted. And then it said at the end of the story, update, captured in Quebec, Canada. So I'm going to tell you, I know a lot about corruption, and I've seen a lot of things that I had to turn my cheek to only because I know what these guys were capable of and what they can get away with if they want to.
Yes. No, I understand that. Let me ask you this. On your case, the problem is many of these things you're saying, like these people, Bill Hastings trying to kill you, they pass the statute of limitations, okay? What can we do now with that except to send it to...
You know what I'd like to do? Make a phone call and just act like I'm his buddy again. And just say, hey, Bill, how you doing? Remember me, this is Tim. And then ask him, you know, he might just hang up the phone on me because he might think that somebody sent me after him and I'm trying to get some out of him. But ask him, like, after all these years, I just wanted to know why you turned on me.
Yeah, that's pretty bad, okay.
And see what he has to say. Well, see, I think the police officer that day, when he said to me that I need to leave or they were going to kill me, well, I opened my shirt and I showed him the wire taped to my chest. I think he believes that it was internal affairs.
Oh, that's why they let you go. Yeah, they let you go. So, what was his name?
I don't even know. I never saw him before.
You didn't know?
I think he was actually, he wasn't from the Harris County FinTech Division. I think he might have been an officer that was just assigned to the Katy Police Department Narcotics Division.
Yeah, he's somebody that they sent, you know, Bill sent.
One of Bill's buddies.
Yeah. So they just wanted to scare you. And they did.
These guys had tats on their arms, long hair and beards, and, you know, they look like you know, biker people.
Yeah. No. And they're scary. You know, if you're sitting on the field for all night and you're hearing them, how they're going to shoot you with a rifle, that.
Yeah.
I don't know how
they
you.
They laid there probably for 45 minutes.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't sneeze, let me tell you that.
No, I knew what was going to happen. I mean, I'm not stupid. I crawled a little further away from them very quietly, an inch at a time, and listen to them laugh and make jokes about it, and talk on the radio to the deputy that was in the unit that pulled us over. Do you see him? And this went on for quite a while.
They expected you to run in the road or something.
Yeah, they thought I was going to walk around and walk down the road.
Yeah.
Where they would be laying in the weeds and they'd have an open shot at me. You know. Or maybe that deputy was going to come back. He could have came and said, hey, you know, where are you heading? Come over to the police car, shoot me, throw a gun on the ground and said I pulled the firearm on him.
Something. That's incredible.
You know?
The deal is like this. The statute of limitations has passed, okay? The guy, basically, we know because they have done some things.
Well, you know, I don't care about no criminal charges, but if it would help you in any way, yeah. He's a turd, and he's dirty. He's dirt. He shouldn't have the position he has because I know he would do what he has to get his way. And if he's not happy with somebody, he'll plant something on him, set him up, or do whatever he has to.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you this.
Because he has the power to do that now. And how he ever became chief of police, that's the wrong job for that man. Because if he's in that position now, I don't know if he still is, but if he is now, you can believe he's a criminal.
Yes. No, I know that he did lie in some of the positions we had, and he did accept the lies of one of his officers, false affidavits and stuff, and they never prosecuted the people that we have absolute proof that they lied to them, but it was a conspiracy.
Yeah.
We believe it was a conspiracy that was dictated by Bill Hastings and the guys in there, his buddies, you know. So we believe that this man is not an honest man, and anything that you or anybody that can help us, it would be nice to at least expose him. So I take your word on it. It would be really nice if you can call him up and somehow tape the conversation, either by putting it on the speaker or putting one of those cups or whatever. Or, you know, there's you know how to do that. And
I got a phone that does all that.
But most probably he's going to just hang up on you. But if you have any recording that you can do, I would be really super happy. Now, once we have all that, we can go to the press. And although the statute of limitations of some of these things have passed, exposing him might get him rid of his job and, you know, cut his balls off and take him out of the position he shouldn't be. And hurt any more people.
I don't want them or anybody there to know where I even am. I would be extremely concerned even at this point to even know
today
he was willing to commit that crime back then,
but
he's willing to do it now.
Team today,
whether he does it himself,
he knows that I'm after him, and we put surveillance cameras in all our cars. We have body cameras, we have audio recorders with us all the time. We have video cameras in all the cars and in the house. We have motion detectors in the house. So, you know, we know what they're capable of, but today, with today's technology, you have cameras in all the gas stations. We only go to gas stations with cameras. You know, so that you, it's going to be pretty hard for them to make a move if you know where to go.
You know,
I mean,
what all he's got, and believe it, believe this, listen to me here. All he's got to do is get a criminal element up there in Katy, Texas, somebody that might be facing a serious crime, and there's a lot of, you know, let's say motorcycle enthusiast types up in them areas, Rosenberg and them areas, and offer them money or
throw the charges.
Say a free pass.
Yeah, get him a free pass.
To take a ride to the state of Ohio.
Yeah. No.
I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you.
Well,
I would be almost afraid, you know. I'm not a sissy. I would never grow up that way. I really don't fear anybody.
No, but
if I had to, I'm in a position to defend myself. I'm very ill now, but yeah, I might be willing to still do that, but I would have to make sure that I couldn't be tracked down.
Yes. Well, another thing is, if you can have the tape recorder and just call him up and just say, I'm dying because of lung cancer, whatever your sickness. You have lung cancer?
No, I have cardiac obstruction pulmonary disease.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm terminally ill.
Yeah, so that's at least cancer, they can cure some of the tumors and stuff, you know. Oh, damn, team. We'll pray for you, okay? God.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The only thing that'll save me is a double lung transplant.
Jeez. Oh.
And I keep getting sick to where if you have an infection, you can't get it because it'll infect the lungs in your body. It'll reject them.
Yes.
And I got four grandchildren now. I just turned 53. You know, I was only in my 20s, late 20s when I started doing this when I was 20 years old, working, you know, with law enforcement agencies and private investigating companies.
Yes. So,
you know,
simply the trouble started because you felt something, like they were using you to stack the drugs in your apartment, and that's when you questioned them, and then it went downhill from then, and then you felt like basically they were going to move on you, and you decided you didn't want those things in your apartment. You threw them out, and that's when the threats started.
Well, what happened is I started doing soon after they had me put a store back, I started doing things with other counties, and I tried to stay my distance from them to figure out, because I wanted to question what was going on, because I knew it wasn't right, and I was actually almost afraid to ask anybody.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who knows who or what, because a lot of them guys, for some reason, and I think there's more corruption in law enforcement and them departments like the drug divisions, narcotics detectives and stuff like that, because there's so many rules in the law that they have to follow to make a case stick. As far as entrapment or enticement and,
yes,
you know, different things like that, it just turns them, you know, they become part of their element.
Yes.
And they actually, some of them like the lifestyle more than they do their jobs.
So they bypass the rules.
Yeah, yeah, they like the illegal aspect of it more than they do the legal part of it. So they get involved in it themselves because there's a lot of money in it. It's too enticing and too tempting for them. So I could say a percentage of them probably do turn dirty.
Yes.
You know, whether they ever get caught in it or not, I don't know. But you can bet there is a good majority of them that at one time or another turn their cheek and, you know, money's not there. You know, if there's seizures made, might not say, hey, there was no money, just drugs. And, you know, finding $50,000 cash in a shoebox was too tempting for them. They couldn't
let it go.
But, you know, I mean, you got to understand, okay. It takes a whole year to earn that money. And there it is, and nobody knows.
Yeah, it's tempting.
Yeah.
God is seeing you. God is seeing them. You know, one day they're going to have to pay. One day.
You know, I don't understand. You know, I read this story on the Internet. Too many people covered up for them. And they really should have went after them. I don't know why the Texas Rangers or the state police didn't make any indictments, throw up any indictments when they caught them lying, that they committed a felony. Why are they still in their positions? They know they committed a felony. They almost admitted to committed a felony, and they're still in their positions. I don't understand it.
That's what I told the Texas Rangers, and that's what I told the FBI, and they didn't make any move on them, and we have absolute proof that they committed perjury. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're in it too. I don't know. But
well, you know what?
Yes.
They all work and they have jurisdiction, so they all know each other. And in that part of Texas, there, Katy, Rosenberg, all them areas, Spring Branch. You go further down into Bear Creek area and all them guys and them, you know, through the years, they are close buddies for years and years, and they'll turn the cheek for each other.
Yeah, that's a problem. It's called collusion.
Because they don't want to be, and there's not, and one police officer don't want to be the guy that, I actually think that's why my friend Larry Feinstein left, resigned from his position up there in Rosenberg, because of issues like that.
He just didn't want to deal with it.
Well, yeah, because he was probably one of the most honest police officers I ever met in my life, except my grandfather. My grandfather was a police officer, and I got cousins that wrote books. He's an author. He writes, it's called The Wagon. It's about a police officer in Chicago that drives a vehicle where they pick up bodies and, you know, dead bodies that are people slain in crimes and stuff like that.
Yes.
And he says everybody has its own story. So he writes books, and he also writes children's books.
Yes. Let me ask you this. How did you find me? You just searched for Bill Hastings? You saw something on the website?
I put his name on the line. I asked, I got on the phone, I asked Siri. I just put his name, said his name, and it came up on my phone screen. William Hastings, Katy, Texas Police Department, Chief of Police. At the bottom of it, it's got your ad.
Yes.
It says, it's got, you know, a story about the officials. I guess it might be your website or somebody's.
Yeah, we saw the email you sent, yeah. Let me ask you this, Tim. Can, if you want, I mean, it would be a very good idea to just prepare a tape, you know, a tape recorder and just give him a call. If you need his number or anything, I have everything. And I even have his home address. I have, you know, nowadays you can find anything in the internet about anybody. And,
yeah, yeah.
And you can call him
know.
Up.
I can't remember his street name. I don't know if he makes more money now. He's probably moved out of the house he lived in. But he had a small little two-bedroom house up in Katy he lived in.
Well, he lives at the end of...
Me and my wife used to go there and eat dinner and stuff with him and his wife.
Yeah.
I don't even remember his wife's name.
You pass Morton Road. You pass Morton Road on Avenue D, and then as you go north, you turn left on like a little.
All I know is his house was the last house right there in the middle of the street, and it had an empty field block next to it.
That's probably he still lives there. I think he still lives there. You know.
Yeah. It's a small house. It's not real large.
No, I think it's his wife and him that live there. He has a son who was convicted of DWI or something that moved to Katy. He was convicted in Harris County. And I think that they've been keeping him out of trouble.
His son, because when I met him, I think he was newly married to this wife. I think he has children from another marriage before this woman.
Okay.
He might have been married prior to that because he was kind of had gray. He was a little gray even back in the 90s.
Yeah, he's old.
He had long hair and it was salt and pepper black and he had a beard and mustache.
Yeah.
And,
whatever you think is best, and I obviously, you know, I don't think you are exposing yourself with today's technology, all cameras everywhere, and cell phones. You know, we always keep an app on the cell phone that you can take video, but the video is being sent, you know. And even if the cops destroy the phone, by the time they take the phone, the video is gone and sent to a website, okay? So you can tell them, hey, you know.
Anything that goes into my phone goes to iCloud. It gets stored through, you know, on there, and it's accessible, you know.
Yes. So then
it's automatically stored on its own in the iPhone, the Apple system.
Yes.
So even if it's erased or broken, it's still there.
It's still there. So. You know, not with today's stuff.
Text messages, everything. Yeah.
They haven't made any move on us, and we really sue them and all that, you know. And we've been finding little leads, but there was a guy that called us, and you know he was willing to talk, and then he got kind of shy. And there's a lot of people that are just simply scared of them, you know.
Because, you know what, they probably, he's very nasty, he's a get-in-your-face kind of guy, threaten you.
Yes.
Grab you by your throat, push you up against the wall, choke you, and threaten you.
Yeah.
Watch them do it to people.
Yeah, try that on me and see what happens.
Watch them take chewing tobacco and spit in people's eyes.
Yeah, let's see if they can do that to me. They do it to me, they're going to get their brain spilled all over the goddamn place. Let me tell you that. That's not going to happen.
You know, I don't know you, and I called you out of good faith. But your website there, when I read it, it's true. He is corrupt.
Yeah.
And anybody that's his best friend that knows him well knows he is. And if they know he's corrupt, they're corrupt too. Because if you're a police officer and you know another one commits a crime, you're just as guilty as he is.
Well, it's the so-called code of silence, you know. That's why, you know, bad cops stay there because the good cops are afraid of them, you know. So everybody keeps silent. And that's what we're trying to get rid of, you know. If we can get rid of the code of silence and we can clean the police, it would be such a great thing. It would be like in Norway, you know, where people that respect the police. If people respect the police, there will be less police officers killed. There will be less people killed because cops won't fear the people and people won't fear the cops. It would be a win-win situation for everybody. But because of the little arrogant inside deals like you've been telling, you know, they want to perpetuate the little their little nest, you know. And that's that's bad for everybody. So it would be nice if we can detangle the situation, just throw the bad tomatoes out of the sack, you know. And if I take your word, I mean, if you want to do the tape and you can dig anything, even if he hangs up on you, then you got proof, number one, that he knows you and that he is afraid of what he may say or whatever. So, you know, and then if you get that, then we can go from there.
If you want to check. If you want to go back, check. You can probably even check to see where he was assigned and where he worked back in the 90s and who his partners were. You can verify what I'm telling you, too, if you have a way to check into that.
We got all the information ready. We got all the information, where he worked, where he lived, where he lives.
So you know that I'm telling you the truth, that he worked for the Syntec Division back in the 90s.
I believe that.
He was a narcotics officer.
I believe you got so many details that you cannot make all this shit up, okay? That's what I believe. At this point, you have mentioned too many places.
I know. I'll probably know more about him, or just as much about him, as anybody that he sits next to and eats his lunch this very day. You know, I don't know what he's done in the years in the past, but I know he did a lot of dirt back in the 90s.
Well, let me tell you this. If you're willing to do that tape and at least question him and tape him, make sure you tape him, test the thing before.
You know what he did to me and my wife, you know, she worked some things with me too. We'd send her in. She'd go in with me and act like she's my sister. And she'd flirt with some of the guys, like in the nightclubs, to see, you know, if they had drugs or were selling them. He did some real crazy things to me with the constable's department up towards 45 and Highway 6. We went into a nightclub one night. He didn't tell me that the news cameras were going to be there and all that. We went in the club. We made some buys. The police, they went in and raided the place without telling me. They were just supposed to get the crooks as they were leaving the club. So we went in there and bought some buys, made some ecstasy buys on some drug dealers. And then all of a sudden, they all come in there, TV cameras. They had everybody out in front up against the wall that was in the nightclub going through their pockets. And they put it out on TV and almost blew my cover. I mean, you know, that was another thing he did to me. And that's when I started losing trust in him. And one time, he actually had somebody that I did a case on. He didn't tell me that he had already went and arrested him. We were making buys on him. They didn't make the arrest yet. They had a sealed indictment on him. They went and arrested him, didn't tell me. He had me meet him at a pool hall with this guy and turned around and was trying to get the crook to think that he wasn't ever arrested, and he was trying to get him on me.
Oops.
And that made me know right there that this guy, you know, was something else. I mean, why would he do that?
Yep.
So it just shows you the way they work, you know.
Yeah.
And I started way back in a juvenile. I first started out with juvenile, you know, division when I first started
Well,
okay, I'm gonna go ahead. I don't wanna let you get off here.
We're gonna go eat dinner with the family, and thank you so much for your call. You know, I really appreciate the information. Yes, thank you so much. The problem, as I said, is the statute of limitations. So a lot of the things you said occurred.
Well, that's all right, but what you asked me about, I'm going to think about that, and I'll probably do that.
Okay.
So I'll be back in touch with you sometime next week, and I'll tell you when I'm going to make that phone call.
And let me tell you this, if you're here in Texas, please give me a call, okay? I was just in St. Louis, Missouri, but not in Ohio. But if I am headed that way, I'll give you a call. And we will pray for you, because I know that having a terminal illness is pretty sickening, not only physically, but mentally speaking. And
it's just
such a bitch, you know, that I'm sorry. I'm sorry for you,
well,
you know.
I got family. It's not me. It's more of my family I'm concerned about, you know.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to them.
My dad used to say the only thing I have or the only thing I'm content with is that all my enemies and I are going to meet in heaven. We're all going to die someday. You know?
Yeah.
We're going to meet again.
That phone call from Dr. Otto, he was talking about, it was about that Bill Hastings, and I was talking to him about the night that he was in the woods and was in the weeds, and they pulled Robbie over, and they would try to kill me. Yeah.
Yikes.
My wife just came in from work, and I was telling her who I'm on the phone with.
Tell her hi, and If you have that information, I really would appreciate it. And let me know, you know, if we can help in anything. Let me know too. I really will pray for you. It's a very tough situation, and I hope that they find the transplant might prolong your life some, you know. So.
Yeah.
But it's hard to find.
Oh, yeah, it will. Yeah. If I get that, yeah. If I can make it to that, there's a real high survival rate.
Yes.
With the medications now.
Over here we met a guy named Larry Gandhi. Have you ever heard of a guy named Larry Gandhi?
No.
He was a police officer, I think, for Rosenberg or Richmond or something like that. He helped us with some of the cases, and I heard Bill Hastings telling him, you know, oh, you're turning on us or something like that. And Larry, he just died a couple of weeks ago. Larry told him, I said, I'm going to do what is right. I'm not going to do what you say. I'm going to do what is right. And he told him right on his face, and he just turned red, man. He turned so red, furious. I wish I could have taken a picture.
His name was Larry Gandhi?
He was Larry Gandhi. He was retired. And he basically reviewed many of the information we had and made some reports that are on the website, actually.
Yeah.
They're on the website. If you want to see his report, he wrote a report on him. And
I read some of the report sheets on some of the qualification sheets, some of the affidavits and the police reports that were written
people
that they just, basically anybody that said anything about them, they went after and made false charges and block them up.
But we were called because
2 days in jail or 10 days in jail, they were real spiteful.
Very, very. Tim, I wish you the best. We're going to pray for you. And
well,
I'll wait.
The last time you'll talk to me. So,
okay.
I'll be back in touch with you. And I'm willing to do that. And let's just see where it goes once I make that call.
If you make the decision, number one thing, I'm going to promise you this. I will treat your call totally 100% confidential.
Nobody's going to know anything, and I will not disclose or do or say absolutely anything unless we agree on something, okay? That's how I treat people who help me with stuff like this, you know.
I want to try to get them to ask why. I'm going to say, hey, why?
Yeah.
You know, why did you do this and why was that? And just hear him say, or even if he, you know, makes a remark like, you deserve it or I hate or something.
That's it.
Just something in there. You know.
Yeah.
Admit that.
Anything, yeah. Anything that is in the context of an affirmation, bang, that's it. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for calling. Okay.
Yeah. You have a nice evening.
Thank you. Same to you. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Yeah. Bye.
This was Timothy Preeb. It is October the 30th, 2015. 7:54 p.m.